It's time for What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.
Yes, it is. Morena, Steve.
Morena, how you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me back. Sorry I missed earlier on.
That's all right. All good. I'm looking forward to getting into it and having a kōrero. Lots happening for the Greens at the moment. A couple of weeks ago, we had the State of the Planet speech from Marama and Chloe. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that were mentioned. Shall we start with this sort of mic drop electrification plan moment? It seems to be a big focus for the Greens heading into the election year.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, we've been putting up policies for a mass increase in solarisation and electrification of our energy system for the last, you know, two elections at least. But with the fuel crisis stuff due to the US and Israeli attacks on Iran, it sort of brings into stark relief just how much better off we'd be if we were running our society on more locally generated energy.
Mm. Does it feel a little bit too little too late, though, that it's, you know, we're at a point where it's a serious crisis that we're dealing with now? Like, are we going to be able to, you know, undergo a huge transformative electrification plan whilst dealing with a crisis at the same time?
No, that's a really good point. I mean, the thing is that still the cheapest forms of electricity are solar generation and wind generation. We'd be far better to be investing the money that's currently been proposed to be invested in a LNG terminal, a $1 billion LNG terminal in Port of Liquid Natural Gas. Be far better to be spending that on solarisation and batteries and more renewable generation. And now, as a kind of a cost differential, if you can work out how to get solar panels onto people's roofs, cuts power bills by at least $1,000 a year. So it's much more affordable. And we can't kind of do it too fast. We have certainly done it too slow. Like, we should have been doing this for at least the last 10 years. Mm. And so, you know, let's crack on with it. And I just think the fuel crisis situation now is a portent of things to come, however long this lasts. The cost of imported fossil energy is only going to go up, and we will always be subject to the vicissitudes of foreign price determinants on oil. So we're way better to be running our transport on electricity, running our households on electricity instead of gas, which has been running out in New Zealand since 2007, before the oil and gas ban came into place. And so, you know, it's any time is a good time. It would have been better to do it, you know, previously, but now is as good a time as any.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can play the shoulda, coulda, woulda game, and we can talk about the long-term sort of money that it would save us, but in the immediate, if we're dealing with, you know, having to pour money into relief for families who are struggling to afford petrol at the moment during this fuel crisis, and the Greens are proposing more money being spent on you know, relief for rural families as well as public transport and more support, whilst also putting more money into solar powers, isn't that quite a lot of spending in the immediate?
In the scheme of things, it's not a huge amount of money. We know when the government's talking about spending $1 billion on the LNG terminal, you know, we're talking about sort of tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And in the scheme of things, it's not a lot. There's huge advantages you get from free public transport across the board. One, it's a cost of living relief for a lot of people who are dependent on mobility to get to their jobs or to get to their friends and family. And it also incentivizes more public transport use, which helps with reducing fossil fuel consumption for people who could be traveling on public transport instead of in cars. Then they are also protecting us against the impact of fuel shortages.
Since the announce a couple of weeks ago, have the Greens heard anything from Labor in terms of support of this potential plan, or do we have any idea of what those potential coalition talks could look like come November?
Crickets, goddamn crickets from Labor, isn't it? I wish Labor was saying more about things. Good to give Labor a bit of a rev about what their policy decisions are going to be on a number of fronts. We have got a pretty solid history of working with Labor, and we will continue to pursue that. We have a pretty good relationship with them, but I would like to see bolder kind of statements of intent from the Labor Party and policies from them on what they plan to do around cost of living, around, you know, ecological and environmental issues, what their position is on, you know, the sort of rip, shit and bust mining strategy of this government, and what their position is on the federal forest crisis, because they seem to be sort of standing sideways and hoping no one notices, and the votes just go their way because people are so unhappy with Luxon.
I do want to touch a little bit on the comments about distancing Aotearoa's relationship with the United States, because this is an interesting one from the Greens, you know, feeling as though perhaps the current government is sitting too nicely in the back pocket of the United States.
I think it's a total betrayal of our long-standing tradition of being a nation with an independent foreign policy. We established that really strongly in the 1980s when we became nuclear free, and the Australian New Zealand ANZUS Treaty was kind of broken effectively, and we departed that kind of close, wherever America goes, we go to war kind of tradition. And this government seems to have forgotten that core principle and seems to be sidling up to not just any American government, but the most reactionary, fascistic American government we've seen since the Second World War. And I kind of can't begrudge the belief that Luxon thinks now's a good time to be buddy-buddy with the United States while they are sowing such chaos in the world, you know, on top of the genocide in Gaza, which is US-backed. They got attacking Iran. They go cutting off supplies to Cuba, they go invading Venezuela. It's like they threaten to steal Greenland. Why do we want to be in international alliance with this Trumpian United States?
It's an interesting one, though, because I guess a few people would argue that in order for us to sort of play a part in peace talks and be a mediating partner in this, we sort of have to be relatively buddy-buddy with all parties, or, you know, we have to be able to have a seat at the table.
I don't know. I think it's much stronger for the international community to be condemning America's attack on Iran and America's part in what's happening in Palestine and other parts of the world. That's a sort of a noble tradition of countries who genuinely believe in the rule of law, and in fact the reason we have a principle of the rule of law is that small countries in a world that is dominated by might is right will always be brushed and squashed and worse off. So at a time when the United States is leaning into that might is right principle, I will do it because I can. And you can't stop me. Now more than ever, we need to be calling that out and standing for a principle of the commonality of human interests being in a law-based process towards peace and decision-making based on discourse across difference, rather than resorting to who's got the biggest bombs and who's got the biggest military.
It is, you know, relatively scary, though, how volatile Trump can be in terms of, you know, turning around and placing tariffs willy-nilly. And so I guess there's potentially a fear that if we were to be incredibly outspoken against the actions of the states, it would harm us in a time that, you know, we're already facing, you know, economic hardship.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in terms of the economics of it, and the other interesting thing is that in the course of, you know, the last few decades, our biggest trading partner is now China. So, interestingly, both the likes of Helen Clark and Don Brash, you know, who I think is a reactionary racist, not very nice person because of anti-treaty stuff, but I think even people as diverse in their political opinions as those two make the case pretty compellingly that our independence is an important part of our relationship in the Asia-Pacific region. There's no point in us picking sides between China and the United States. In fact, that would be a very bad thing to do. And it's much more sensible for us to hold a position of independent foreign policy. And I say independent is different from neutral. I'm not saying we should be Switzerland, because neutrality is also has its moral challenges, because there are certain times when you should stand on the side of what is right and what is just. And that means you should speak out against injustice. And if we hold to that principle in our independence, we should speak out against the injustices that the United States is committing, and likewise injustices that China is committing. But we don't do that with a favour for one of those superpowers as our ally. I think it's such a sort of archaic, imperial, old-world idea about our relationship with the other colonised by Britain countries. That sort of Five Eyes relationship, which has had its day, and we need to move to a more sophisticated and mature version of nationhood than that.
Interesting. Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning, Steve. Always great to catch up with you, and hope you have an awesome rest of your day.
Thank you so much. Oh, I really enjoyed talking to you, and have a great day yourself.
Kia ora, ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Steve Abel from the Green Party.